You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the ESPN Aussie Hoops Hour. Kane Pittman and Olga Norledge still just trying to wrap our heads around what happened in Illawarra last night as we record this podcast between the Hawks and the New Zealand Breakers. We're going to dive right into that game. We're also going to get into Sydney Kings head coaching news and Jalen Galloway, of course, making his way over to the NBA as well. And then we're going to look ahead to the weekend, or later on this week, I should say, when the semi-final series finally get underway. It feels like I haven't seen Melbourne or Perth play basketball in months. Just quickly, before we dive into the play-in game, we did say this last week. The schedule's going to be a bit all over with the podcast, just in terms of when we drop it, because of the midweek games and the schedule of the postseason. So make sure you subscribe, turn the notifications on, and you'll know when we do drop a new episode. So, Olgan, let me start here. The Illawarra Hawks, massive congratulations to them to get through to the Final Four, something that I did not think was possible at multiple stages right throughout this run, and they just continue to get it done. And last night, it probably shouldn't have been a surprise that this was a three-point game. They played four games this season, these two teams. The biggest margin was 4 points. They played in thrillers right throughout. I don't really know how I would describe this game from a watchability standpoint. what do you think now, just in the hours after the game?
A few things. So if I told you before this game that Gary Clark would have 7 points, Tyler Harvey would have 7 points, they'd shoot a combined 6 of 21, would you assume that the Hawks would win this game? And then if I told you that Parker Jackson Cartwright had 19 points, granted 9 assists, but he was 5 of 17, had 6 turnovers, would you assume that the New Zealand Breakers would have kept this as close as they did? It was just a game that was all over the place. It wasn't pretty. It was gritty, and I think the fact that it was the nature of what the outcome meant, all of that stuff, as along with just the nature of the way the guys were playing, which was quite hard nosed. It was tense, and I think that tension, how chaotic it was, that made for a game that was still valuable to watch, that like still enjoyable to watch in a way. Again, like you said, was it the greatest basketball game we've ever seen? We've seen some absolute amazing games this season where it comes down to awesome shot making and play calling, things like that. This was just like two teams trying to beat each other down, and one of them ended up winning because a Parker Jackson Cartwright three went halfway down, rattled out, and the Breakers. I feel it's just good that it's like they don't have to keep trying to push through this. Every single turn an injury happened, they got as far as they could imaginably. It was an incredible run from them, but I think the Hawks at the end of the day, like, they just had the pieces to get through, and they managed to scrape out this very weird game.
Yeah, I think that to your point, if this was round 12 on a Monday night, you might have got to the second quarter and the scrappiness and just the ridiculous number of turnovers. You might have turned this game off and said, you know what? I don't need to be doing this to myself at this point in the year. But because one team was going to get eliminated, and I think ultimately because of the stories of these two teams getting there, if you're invested in the NBL, you found yourself gripped by what was going on. And when we talk about those turnover numbers, 20 to 18, so 38 total turnovers, the Sydney Kings led the league with turnovers per game with 13.6 this year. So both teams absolutely blew the doors off the team average. I think some of it was good defense. Both these two teams, particularly towards the back end of the season, have played good defense. But I think some of them were just absolutely head-scratching turnovers. And for this Breakers team, you mentioned the Parker Jackson Cartwright missed three at the end of this game. It was actually a pretty similar shot to the dagger that he hit against the Kings only a few nights earlier. Now, I think this was slightly better contested than that one in Sydney, but it was the same look going to his left on the wing, and it was close. And I think you're exactly right. The break is to even get to that point. They were down 15 in the first half. But even late in the third quarter, they were down 9, and they looked like the game was really going to be over. And above all the other injuries they've had along the way, Will McDowell-White, who has had probably an extremely frustrating season, he goes down with an ankle, tries to play, but really is not good enough and then isn't able to come back out on the floor. So I think, you know, all things considered, the Illawarra Hawks probably have to walk away and feel like they're pretty lucky to get this win. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. When it's playoffs, it doesn't matter how you get them or what happens. You take it, and now they get a chance to go to Melbourne.
Yeah, so on the Breakers, the McDowell-White thing just sucked because from that point on, the Breakers basically had like one creation point, and that was Parker Jackson Cartwright. From that point on, it was just slim pickings. You could tell that Finn Delaney wasn't 100% still sort of coming back from that back injury. I know Zion Lucheadam wasn't 100% either. He had little spurts where he was clearly super talented and could get stuff done, but you can tell he was still limited. And so with the pieces that they had, the pieces that were missing, it's not just Anthony Lamb, it's also guys in foul trouble as well. So just like a lot of their talent just not on the floor.
The foul trouble stuff, we've discussed that the Breakers have been playing undersized all season long. And honestly, part of that is by the roster construction. But in the first 3-4 minutes of this game, they really do need Mango Mattiang to be on the floor. And he gives away that offensive foul where he just runs through Wani Swakalabulluk. And then the second foul that he picks up is on Sam Froehlich down the other end, where it's a touchdown pass to Froehlich. And he's going to have an easy layup. And all he does is push him in the back. Like, it was the most pointless foul of all time. And I was sitting there frustrated just to start the game that way with one of the guys that you really, really need on the floor. And I think that unsettled them to start. So when you talk about the foul trouble, I thought it was pretty self-inflicted, particularly with those two fouls.
Yeah, and this game was sort of a microcosm of their entire season. It's kind of interesting that the Sydney Kings game was a microcosm of their season. And it laid out, it manifested in that game, and that's why they're out. This is the reason why the Breakers are out. It's a mixture of them continually getting injured for some reason. And McDowell-White was that. And he tried to play in that second half. He played a few possessions. I think they went, the Hawks went on a 6-0 run and McDowell had to get out of there. And then it was just their lack of size, their lack of imposition in the paint. It was the Illawarra Hawks had 15 offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
I don't know how many games you can win if the opposing team more than doubles your offensive rebound count. And that's a part of it too. We know how lacking they were at the five spot when it was just Mango Mattiang and Dane Pinot. The hope was that Zion Lucheadam could play a bunch of five, but I think with his injuries late, it was you needed him just to come and be himself and figure out where he fits regardless. Right? You couldn't figure out the different positions that he can play in, the different spots to put him in. It got to a point where you just needed him to go out there and be as effective or productive as he can be. So this game came down to a lot of those different things that have affected the Breakers throughout the season. Most prominently, the injuries. It's just they just didn't have enough bodies. And they got good output from Mantas Rupstavicius, from Tom Abercrombie, who played his final game of his NBL career. They got decent production from everyone. Finn Delaney hit some huge shots. But it just wasn't enough. And the lack of size, the lack of bodies, that just, you can't get over a team consistently. You can't win consistently if you don't have those things, and the Breakers didn't have those things throughout the season, and it sort of came to a point tonight that night.
Yeah, I think we should get to the Hawks as well. The Breakers, obviously, we've discussed throughout, and they've been one of the, what feels like one of the hard luck stories throughout the season. Tom Abercrombie, you did mention him. It was set up to be a miraculous second half, really. He came in that third quarter, and he hit a three straight away, then he drew a charge, and then he hit another big three in the fourth quarter, and it looked like maybe he was going to hit some crazy shot that was going to help the Breakers get the win. It was cool to see him do that, and a little bit sad at the end of the game because he's been such a likable player for so long. So a tough season for the Breakers. You know, I'm curious to see what they do in the offseason, particularly with the roster construction. It was a little strange to start. They had great players on the roster, but yeah, we had the discussion in the first 2-3 weeks of the season that it looked like maybe they were going to be a little small. Now, maybe if they were healthy, it wouldn't have mattered because they got to this point despite having all those injuries. So that's probably something they would look at. But the Breakers, Unfortunately, after the grand final last year, they're done and dusted. The Hawks, a lot of people are going to be talking about Dave O'Hickey coming into the starting lineup. And I think having someone like that on the floor for so many minutes, I think that kind of contributed to the chaos of the game because he kind of plays that way. But I think that it worked in the Hawks' favor in a game where there were silly turnovers. There were mistakes being made. No one could hit shots. But he was the one that was able to block a shot, save a ball around his back, falling out of bounds, just all those crazy little plays that he was making along the way. In the end, I think that those were winning plays that added up. But a really interesting decision to bring him into the starting lineup for this matchup from Jason Tatum. I don't think anyone at this point in time is too surprised that Tatum's willing to make some big moves.
Yeah, and that was super bold from Tatum. Jason Tatum has done some really bold things. Perhaps the boldest is at the end of this game, with 2 minutes to go, he threw Bawali Bales in for his first minutes of the game for one defensive possession, and Bawali fouled Parker Jackson Cartwright, sent him to the line. But putting Dave O'Hickey in the starting lineup, this Hawks team has done a really good job of trying to neutralize star guards. They did it with Bryce Cotton really, really well. The coverages against him were really good. With this, it was pick up Parker Jackson Cartwright 94 feet, make it really difficult for him to sort of just to handle the ball, right? Just to do his thing. And that's what Dave O'Hickey's job was, right? He is not the most skilled player in the league. I think his skill is underrated, but he's really smart and he's super athletic. Yeah. He's sneakily big and he knows angles. He knows he can read the game really well in again, a really underrated way. And so him picking up 94 feet on Parker Jackson Cartwright was really huge. And then the game plan of this team was to counteract the thing that we just spoke about, which is the Breakers do have a deficiency inside. And so it was throw it into Sam Frohling. Like, everything is inside out. It goes into him. It goes into Gary Clark, whether it's down in the low block or in the mid post, and work out of those actions. And that worked because the Breakers just didn't have the size consistently to guard that sort of stuff. And Sam Frohling is one of those guys who he goes unheralded because his game is so boring, right? He's just not a sexy player by any means. But he dropped the quietest 21-9 last night. And that was a huge reason for their win. Justin Robinson had a good game, and obviously Dave O'Hickey and Juanis Wagner Bullock defensively were great. But Sam Frohling being able to keep the scoreboard ticking and being imposing in the paint, which is the crux of where everything the Hawks do offensively comes from, like, that was huge for that thing. This was game planned very well from Jason Tatum.
Good morning to Sam Frohling and his boring basketball game, according to Olga Nulich. I know what you're saying, Olga. Understated. He does a lot of
little
things.
It's just stock standard, yeah. Right? It's not sexy. He's not magnate dunking on people. He's not blocking shots. It's just like meat and potatoes sort of basketball.
He did throw down a big left-hander only a week or so ago. So you can, from time to time, get up. But this is the one thing I will say, because I did want to get to Sam Frohling. I think it's a great point you make. On the jump in the pregame show, you know, Gazy mentioned Sam, and I wanted to get further into that, because I said, if you look at this matchup, they'd played three times throughout the season. In those three games, Sam Frohling had 10 offensive rebounds, and he'd had one really good offensive game from a scoring perspective. But to me, coming into this game, this was a matchup that he could put up really, really big numbers. But I do wonder with Sam, and he's still so young, so this is part of him continuing to mature. But sometimes when I watch, I'm like, he's got more aggression in him. And sometimes you see it in patches in games. But I thought last night he played like he knew that he was going to be too big for this team. And he knew that no one was going to be able to box him out on the glass and he could really fill up the box score. So he had 6 offensive rebounds in this game. He was 9-for-13 from the floor. So to your point, not only was he scoring at an efficient rate, he was able to create those second chances in a game that was so scrappy, and you need those extra opportunities in a postseason game, win or go home. So I thought that it was a massive night for him to go, because sometimes you can have big games, and maybe it's a big game against another big matchup, and that's really cool. But I thought it was fun to see him in a against a team that he should dominate in a postseason game, really, to me, be the best player on the floor.
Yeah. The big test is next, though. We saw Froling have, we saw Froling have a lot of troubles against Will Magne. And so that size and athleticism in the paint caused him some issues. He's going up against Melbourne United, which is a steady dose of Joe Lualachewul Jr. and Ariel Hokpoti. So these are two of the best defensive centers in the league, both seven-footers, both athletic. This is going to be a test for them. And this is a Hawks team that plays inside out. How many three-point attempts did they have last night? They were 4 of 21, right? They're not a prominent three-point shooting team. Yes, they want to play inside out. Yes, they'd love to get more output out of Tyler Harvey and Hyung-Jung Lee and Todd Blanchfield and these guys. But the crux of what they do is getting it inside. And I wonder if there are going to be any advantages inside when they go up against Melbourne United, because when they try to do that against the Jack Jumpers in that first playing game, they weren't able to create advantages by throwing it in. And so this will be big from Sam Froling, who we know has like the capacity to be a really, really solid player. I think he just has to go in with like a level of deliberateness. He's got to at the very least think that he's at the level of those other guys, and not be scared or feel daunted by their imposition in the paint. That's probably going to be the key to this next matchup. Sam Froling is going to be amazingly important in this semifinal series.
Yeah, mark this down, because you just made me think about this. So this is on the fly. So there's been no real thought going into this. So it could be a take that goes very, very wrong in the next week or so.
I can't wait for this.
But for the Hawks to only knock down 4 threes and win this game. And the Breakers knocked down 10. Now, they were only 10 for 30, so 33%. So it wasn't a scorching night. But that's a big differential, -6 from beyond the three-point line. I totally agree with you. The Hawks are not going to be able to win this game dominating inside, I don't believe. So I will be stunned if the Hawks win a game in this series against Melbourne United. They're going to have to hit 10-plus threes. There is no way they can win a game if they don't hit at least 10 threes in a postseason game. Mark it down.
Where are they getting 10 threes from?
Well, granted, a Tyler Harvey game.
A Tyler Harvey game. Look, he made 1 three last night. Gary Clark did not make any. He hit a bunch in the playing game before it. Todd Blanchfield didn't hit anything. Hyung-Jung Lee had some stretches, but
they had great looks.
Great looks. And Justin Robinson had two of those threes. I don't know how many times you're banking on him hitting 2-plus threes in a game. Getting 10 threes out of this team is going to be super difficult. And especially because the way this team should be able to get threes is to basically set the table inside, draw defenders in, and that'll help. And have guys in there that'll widen the floor, right? Make the defense shrink a little bit, get those shots out there. I don't know if this United team is going to be as reactive to the ball getting in the paint, knowing who they have in there, right? And then even if they do, to an extent, you've got Shai Ili and Matthew Dellavedova, two of the best, not just two of the best defenders, but two of the best like closeout guys in the league. It's going to be really tough. I don't see where the Hawks' advantages are here, because even if it's Gary Clark, it's, all right, does United have a guy who they can throw on guys like that? Of course, yeah, they got Luke Travers. And then if Luke Travers is in foul trouble, they've got Kyle Bowen, who has shown that he can give you really good minutes defensively guarding those elite foremen. I remember that one of the throwdowns against Mitch Creek, he had like back-to-back steals against Mitch Creek, really held his own, bodied up really well against him. If you can do that against Mitch Creek, you can probably do that against most other elite fours in the NBL. I don't know where I'm not saying this is impossible for the Hawks, right? But we've been talking ad nauseum about how good United is and how versatile they are. They are so good on both ends. And I just don't see where the Hawks are going to find advantages against this team.
Season series, Melbourne won all three games. Two of those games were before Justin Tatum took over. So I do just think, naturally, anything you're looking at with the Illawarra Hawks, there is two different versions of this team. So I kind of disregard anything that happened before that middle of November period when Tatum took over there. They did play in the final game.
It was tight, too.
92-87. And Melbourne did play really all their guys big minutes. Brad Neely came in for the start. He got that early bucket, but he only played 3 minutes. They played their starters around 30 minutes there. So, yeah, the Hawks could be competitive. I still just think the biggest question with this series is going to be how Melbourne United playing game one. after weeks off. I think that that's the one variable. Yeah. If you were asking me who I think is going to win the series, I would say I think Melbourne's going to win in two games. That would be my prediction. But I'm going to be tuning in very curiously to see how this game starts and how Melbourne look coming off such a long break.
Yeah, and we could talk about how professional United is, and Dean Vickerman has been through scenario after scenario, so nothing should faze them. Like, they should be prepared for everything that they're confronted with, including this giant break. But it is a giant break. There is a ton of possibility for there to be either rust or just or for them to come in a little bit sluggish. Going up against a team that just played a really competitive matchup and had ample time. It's the perfect amount of time for the Hawks. They've had two matchups over the past week, and they have a 3-day break. It's not like it's one day and then they're off, right? They've got a decent break going to this game. So they're, as far as rhythm and momentum, the Hawks have that. I think maybe the only thing that maybe works in United's favor in that regard is the fact that I don't know if the Hawks got some amazing victory that they can then use to create momentum to go into a game like this. It's not like they shot the lights out and they were feeling themselves going to this one. That was as like grinded out as it gets. And so I don't know if there's like, all right, guys, like let's use that to carry over into Melbourne. Like we spoke about to start this, it might just be, hey guys, like let's forget about that. That was really gross. Let's just look forward and forget about what's behind us. It very well could be that, but this time off is just, it's just, at the very least, it's awkward. I haven't watched United or the Wildcats play in literally a month, and it's basically a month we haven't seen these teams play. So I'm curious at how they come out.
Yeah, I wonder if Justin Tatum and the Hawks in the locker room, they just sit there and go, well, this is further evidence that we don't need to play perfect to win games. We can scrap it out and we can find ways, whether it's on the offensive glass or turning. Yes, we had a lot of turnovers, but we also created a lot of turnovers, and that helped our offense as well. So they might take something from that. And the defense, honestly, has been so stable for so long now that you have a pretty good trust in that. The starting lineup will be fascinating. I'll say that. Will Tatum continue to roll with the group that he had there?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One point I wanted to make before we move on to the Kings and Gorgon and Galloway and everything going on up there. I did see on the broadcast and on social media, there's kind of this message that, oh, it's so good to have the Hawks back winning basketball. They've been through such a tough period. And he missed the playoffs 1 year, Alks. Like, I was sitting there, every time I heard it, seen someone say that, I'm like, what about the Adelaide fans out there? What about the Brisbane fans out there that they haven't sniffed the playoffs in years? I think they've had it a little harder than the little Hawkies. That's the only thing I would say. They were great only the year before last.
Yeah, so what, the 36ers haven't made the playoffs in 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
As a journalist, I've never covered a Brisbane Bullets playoff series.
That's right.
Since they came back into the league.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's weird. The Jacomus era of the Illawarra Hawks, it's made out to seem longer than it was. It was just a year and a bit.
It probably felt very long, if you're a fan, to be fair.
100%, but, right? And every loss from that point on, basically every loss to start this season just felt like 10 losses.
It
felt like a year off your life. So I appreciate that. But yeah, I get like that. Brian Gorgeon was their coach not that long ago. Like Brian Gorgeon was their coach before, more recently than, like you said, the 36ers and Brisbane Bullets have even come close to making a playoff series. So yeah, there has been winning basketball in Illawarra, what, 2022?
Yeah.
Like, that's like 2 years ago. That's fine. And again, it's cool. The thing that I do like, and because I've been around Illawarra a decent amount, I've lived in Sydney most of my life. They don't always get a lot of fans out there.
Yeah.
Even during the LaMelo days, people didn't come out to watch games. They weren't filling those stadiums out. They were getting maybe 2,000 or 3,000. They're consistently hitting that 5,000 plus number. They're packing that place out. And I think there is momentum that Justin Tatum and Gary Clark and Sam Folling and the way these guys are playing and Tyler Harvey, they're creating this momentum. There's a legitimate sort of people are getting into the stands, and I think that is the positive thing to take from all this. It wasn't always the case. Even when they were winning games back in 2022, 2021, it was around COVID and whatever, but they weren't really filling it out. Now it seems like their fans are coming in as good as I've ever seen them.
Yeah, it seemed like an awesome atmosphere on the TV as I was watching it over here. But yeah, you know, with Nathan Sobey sitting courtside, you think that man thinks the Hawks have had it tough? He's desperate to play the postseason. He's desperate to play some playoff basketball. Shout out to my man, Damon Lowry. I really just had to point this out because, you know, he's always sticking up for the Hawkies on the broadcast or on his NBL media stuff. Stop crying, Damon. The Hawks are back in the playoffs. You mentioned Brian Gorgeous. Now he was with the Hawks. Now it looks like he's going to be with the Sydney Kings. Before we dive into everything that's gone down with the Kings, you know, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone that they moved on from Abdel Fattah. We discussed last week what went wrong with the Kings. The news came out not too far after that, so that's not a big surprise. Gorgeous is fascinating to me. Keep in mind, we're recording this. It's around 10 a.m. on Tuesday morning, so things are obviously going to continue to change. Where is that at right now? It does seem like it's going to happen.
Yeah, it does. So, yeah, Tuesday morning right now, my feel is that there'll be an agreement and a signing sometime later this week. It seemed like a foregone conclusion for the last few weeks that there was interest from Gorge in a job in the NBL, and when he turned down Adelaide, there was a part of it that was quite sincere, that the community in Adelaide had really rallied around Scott Ninnis. And so he felt as though he didn't want to be that guy to take that from Ninnis. So that was legitimate, right? The talks with Adelaide with Gordon were legitimate as well. That was very close to being signed. And so there was some sincerity there. But there was also like this thing over here that was like, something else is probably going to come up. And whether it was going to be the Sydney Kings, whether it was going to maybe be the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, another job was maybe going to open up. And if it didn't, Gorge was cool waiting a year and joining the NBL the following season. But yeah, there were enough whispers that the Sydney Kings job might open up. And as soon as it did, then obviously the talks could then ramp up. And so we're at a point now where the talks are happening. Nothing has been agreed to as of yet. Gorge flies to or flew to Sydney today. And so he arrives in Sydney. They will ramp up those talks. They will firm. And I imagine an agreement will be in place today or tomorrow for a signing to happen and for an announcement to come soon. But this has seemed like a foregone conclusion for a few weeks now.
I was trying to think about, you know, whether it's leagues that we cover and we know well, whether it's the NBA, NBL, and what coaches I can remember having this big of a gap and then going back. And I guess Rick Carlisle, I actually just thought of Rick Carlisle right now with the Pacers as one that I think was a solid 15 years or so. But for Gorge, like the championships in 03, 04, 05, to go back there, there probably is some pretty strong feeling from him that we know that he wants to win. We know he's competitive, but he also likes a challenge. And we've both had the benefit of talking to Gorge a lot over the last even just 6 months post-World Cup. And I remember having a chat with him at one point in time about potential NBL opportunities. And I just remember the one thing that he continually said is, I want to go somewhere where there's a challenge. So for me, going to Illawarra was a challenge because that was a franchise that was struggling. And I wanted to bring basketball back in a strong place in that community and in that town that loves the team so much. No doubt he did that. Now, we just discussed that little drop-off there, but he did great things for Illawarra. I wonder with Sydney, let's say if they were winning a bunch of games, they wouldn't have, you know, made this move. But let's just rewind it 12 months ago. Chase Buford comes off the two titles. I don't know whether he would have taken the job 12 months ago, but it does seem now that, look, they've had a bad season. I think it's an unbelievable opportunity to walk in there. You know, you've got great resources. You know, you're going to have a great roster. But I think there is something to be said that, no, well, I can come in and we can bring this program back to where it could be and we can win a title next year. It seems like the type of thing that might motivate him, because you know very well this is a man that has lost no excitement, no enjoyment, no level of motivation for the game. He talks your absolute head off when it comes to the NBL and basketball right across the world.
Yeah, and I agree with you. If this was last season, I don't know if he does this. I feel like he's at a point in his life and career where he's achieved a lot. He's achieved perhaps more than anyone in Australian basketball ever. And so he doesn't have to take jobs if he doesn't if he doesn't feel like he's going to be challenged, or if he's going to maybe learn something from it. There's no real need for him to take a job just to take it. That's why the Adelaide job was interesting to him, because this is a team that hadn't made the playoffs in a significant amount of time, and he could have come in there and helped build something. Now to the point where the Sydney Kings were back-to-back champions, they were really, really, they were at the top of the NBL hierarchy, and now they've fallen. And now this is an opportunity with a blank slate roster-wise to build something up again. It's a team that he has won multiple championships on. They won multiple championships just a few years ago, and now he has an opportunity to bring them back there. So I think it's like you said, it's the challenge. I think he really, really likes that. And I'm curious of what Gorgian as head coach means, right? If you're a player, I was talking to someone about this yesterday. How much is there from like a free agency standpoint of, man, I got to go play for Gorge, right? He's the Boomers head coach, but he's the Boomers head coach for this Paris Olympics.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know how many, we've seen this in the past, like promises you can make, like come join my domestic team and I'll pick you for the Boomers. I wonder if there's obviously a reverence around Australian basketball for someone like Brian Gorgian. And I imagine there would be players who want to play for him. I'm curious at the extent of that. I think it could be widespread. I wonder if maybe players don't care as much. I'm super curious to see how they attack free agency and how much Gorgian plays a factor in recruiting guys, because I actually don't know what the sentiment really is out there.
Yeah, I wonder what it means for the Boomers now, because as you pointed to, certainly to this point, Gorge is adamant that he is done after the Olympics when it comes to the national team. He will say that straight up. You can press him on it, and he will say, no, this is the last time I'm doing it. He is adamant. Now, who knows? Who knows whether that could change? But I still think, regardless, if you're a I don't know what it means for the imports as much, but certainly for the local players, I would expect that there is still going to be a desire to play under Gorge because of the track record, because also, I think, importantly, because he is such a vocal authority on the game of basketball. And there is no one that in a press conference that will go into bat and just be so passionate about guys on his team. We've seen it before. I'm not that surprised that he would consider going to Sydney, though, because you know this. We've discussed it on this show. Guys like Jordy Hunter that he loved and was talking about a lot. Jalen Galloway that he was speaking about a lot, which we can get to in just a little bit there. I always got the sense that he had his eyes over everything in the NBL. But from the game style, the way the Sydney Kings played, the organization, the arena, there was something that I felt in conversations that there was something that was an allure to him about this Sydney Kings franchise. And clearly he's got a lot of history there as well.
Yeah, I had some sort of just casual chats with Gorge in Bendigo last week, 2 weeks ago, whenever the Boomers played there. And I was sort of not shocked. I was somewhat surprised that he watches every game. Like we were talking about Southeast Melbourne Phoenix games, just random games. He was bringing up random play calls, things like that. So he's had his eyes on every single NBL game this season. And then the other funny little wrinkle in this, and we're talking as though this is going to get done, right? Because it probably will.
Yeah.
Right now, Gorge is second all-time in win percentage among coaches in the NBL. Do you know who's first? Who do you think?
Is it current coach?
No.
Not sure.
So Gorge is second with... He's on 68.9%.
Well,
someone
actually,
who's beating him by 0.2%.
In recent years?
Yes, actually not 0.2. 0.2%. Yeah, recent years.
Yeah, the Sydney Kings coach of recent years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Our man Chase.
Chase Buford is the NBL's leader in history in winning percentage. And he recently just passed, with winning that championship, he passed Brian Gorges. This is a chance for Brian Gorges to come in and retake that mantle of the winningest percentage coach in the NBL.
And by the way, we love Chase on this podcast. There's no question about that. But I would say, if you're talking about the sample size, I think Gorge might have him covered just a little bit as well. That is an impressive number to have done it for so long.
I think Gorgon has coached 800-plus games.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Buford wouldn't have cracked 100, obviously, in two seasons. But Buford is on 69.1%. And Gorge is on 68.1%. And so this is an opportunity for Brian Gorgon, who was recently surpassed by Chase Buford of the Sydney Kings, to maybe get one over him.
Come back,
Chase. Not that that would mean anything for his legacy, obviously. But I think it's a very fun wrinkle in this whole situation.
That's nice numbers there. And, maybe Chase wants to come back at some point in time. I think we would all love to see him back in and around the league at some point in time if he decided to do so. Jalen Galloway, so another player we've discussed a lot, and you talk about things that went wrong with the Sydney Kings right throughout this season. Galloway, you started the season. Look, we make a lot of bold calls on this podcast, but I do remember, it might have been after literally three games in the season, I said something along the lines of, the Kings are going to have the top two most improved players at the end of the season, and it's going to be Galloway and it's going to be Quatnoy. Now, that didn't work out. But no question, the momentum for Jalen Galloway this NBL season was curtailed a little bit with that injury that he suffered, and he missed a period of time. And then, like every player on the Kings roster, it just felt that he was starting, he was out of the lineup, he was in the lineup, the rotations were messed up. It made absolutely zero sense to me. But overall, I think that we would probably both agree, I won't speak for you, but he has the skill set and the athleticism that it is so, so very easy to see why NBA teams would be interested in him. And maybe even more so would be the Milwaukee Bucks would be interested in him. This is an aging team that doesn't really have too many athletes outside of Giannis on the roster. Now, I don't know what Jalen Galloway is going to do in terms of playing this season, but he is the type of player that I'm not surprised that there's been interest in. We've heard his name bounced around. People have spoken about him at events that I've been to and games I've been to. There's been people that have been watching this guy.
Yeah, and we sort of knew at the start of the season that Jalen Galloway was probably going to end up on an NBA roster at the end of the season. He just had to show a little bit. Now, he didn't just show a little bit. I think his counting stats, I don't think people realize how impressive the jump was. He doubled his counting stats. Granted, his minutes went up, but those counting stats doubled across the board. He's like your prototypical NBA wing. He's a 6'7" athlete, like elite athlete at this level. And I think at the next level, he's still a really solid athlete. The jump shot showed some improvements. I think the volume went down toward the end of the season, but I think he's clearly taken strides in that area. The first step is unbelievable. Once he gets in the paint, his ability just to jump off 2 feet and just rise up over guys. He's got a good jump off 1 foot as well. And you bring up the Bucks and the sort of the player they need. And obviously you're more across what the Bucks do than I am. But like someone like a Marjon Beauchamp, right? Who is, have I got that name right? Am I good?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Someone like that. Like that's the type of player that they're trying to incorporate in this lineup with Giannis and these guys. And I wonder if, and I don't think Galloway is at that level yet, obviously. But it just feels like stylistically, it's a really interesting fit. It's a player that he's not just going to go and stew and just hang around there. This is a two-year, two-way deal. So he's there all of next season as well. So this seems like a project that they may actually tap into at points because it's the type of player that it seems like they're showing a ton of interest in lately.
Yeah, I might have gone a little too far with this at the moment, but as you did,
he's going to start in the playoffs this season, right?
No. look, you know this, Oggs. Like you get text messages, and particularly when it comes to Australian players that come over and people ask, and you know, who is this guy? What can he do? And it's funny that you bring up Beauchamp. I did text someone and I said he's better than Beauchamp. Now, do I mean that right now? But I think projects to be, because I think that the skill set translates really, really well. I was surprised that his three-point percentage was down at 33%, because he felt like he shot the ball better than that. It was at low volume, and again, towards the back end of the season, got a little funky there. But I think he'll be a fine shooter. That's probably what he's going to have to do. We say that with so many guys, particularly the Australians, everybody. It feels like. If he can shoot the ball, he projects to be that NBA type guy, and he's ultimately landed at a pretty good franchise in terms of the opportunities he might get, the people he'll be around, and of course he'll be there with our guy Trevor Gleason as well there, still with the Bucks. So it's not a bad spot to land. Great news for Jalen Galloway there, who, he might be one of those guys that we talk in the future about Boomers camps, and is he going to be involved in those types of things? We know he has played for the Boomers in the past. I think we should talk a little bit about Perth and Tassie. So we've already hit Melbourne, Illawarra. That game is on Thursday night, game one for Perth and Tassie Friday night. And much like Melbourne United, Perth, it feels like we haven't seen for months and months and months play basketball. We did see Tassie last weekend, and they were incredibly impressive handling that Illawarra team. What is probably one or two things that's grabbing your interest with this series right off the bat?
So I got two things. The first one is, can Jack McVay and Will Magne play at the level, play at that peak consistently throughout a series? Because if they do, I don't know how you stop this Jack Jumpers team, because they've elevated... Not. They've relax. Hold up. I've got the flip side. Just you chill. I don't know how you stop them if those two are playing at that level. Because if you've got Milton Doyle, who is just such like a professional out there, he plays with so much control. If you have someone like him taking exactly what the defense gives him, and then Jack McVay is playing like a local, just a straight up superstar in the NBL, and so is Will Magne. The strides they've made defensively, if you've got those guys doing what they do offensively, I just don't know how you stop this Jack Jumpers team. They're too organized, they're too well drilled, and if the talent is also making that appearance, I don't know what you do there. The flip side is, one of the issues with this Jack Jumpers team all season long has been their lack of sort of point of attack perimeter defenders. I don't know who you put on Bryce Cotton. And granted, it'll be a team effort. That is what the Jack Jumpers do. It's what they've been known for since they came to the NBL. Their team defense is unbelievably impressive. But you do need a point of attack guy to make life difficult for Bryce Cotton. And I don't know who that guy is on that roster. Is it Sean McDonald? I don't think it's Milton Doyle. It's not. I don't know if it's Anthony Dremick. Just having that one guy that you can throw on him. The Hawks did a good job not just having the team defense on Bryce Cotton, but you have Wani Swakalabulluk who you can throw on him. You have Dave O'Hickey. You have Hyung-Jung Lee, who isn't the greatest defender, but he's big. I don't know if the Jack Jumpers have a version of that to really stifle Bryce Cotton. If you can't stifle Bryce Cotton, it's a tall order to beat this Perth Wildcats team if he's able to do what he wants. Now, I don't think they're going to let him do what he wants, but I don't know if Jack Jumpers have the personnel to really make life too difficult for Bryce.
Yeah, I noted down two things. We talk too much, Og, and we think along the same path. But I had a couple of things noted down, and the one question I had was, two-part question. How many points do you think Bryce Cotton is going to average in this series? And then the follow-up is, how many points do you think he needs to average? Because when you spoke about that Jack Jumpers team, and the four guys, really, if we believe now that Magne is back to the level now, his impact, and you look at the on-off stats, you look at the efficiency, the lineup data, when he's on the floor, it's been out of this world. But the question was, is he going to actually play 25 minutes plus by the time you get to the postseason? He did that against Illawarra, and it was outrageous what he was able to do. So if you include him with Crawford and Doyle and McVay, and you've got four guys... Like, if I'm picking the top five players in this series, I've got Bryce Cotton number one, and then the next four players are Jack Jumpers. Can I show you this?
And yeah. I know not everyone can see this. I jot down weird notes. I had literally just written down the top five players.
Yeah.
And it's Bryce, Magne, McVay, Doyle, and then I put Crawford. And like that could be Crawford or McVay. So the extent to this is annoying. The extent to which we're on the same page is just shut up. Like that's not. But yeah, no, I'm on the exact same page as you.
So if that's the case, and I honestly don't think there's much of an argument to dispute that. If you're talking about the top five players in this series, so how many points? Because I already feel like we'll get to game one. And look, if Bryce doesn't do this, and I just don't think the Wildcats are going to win game one, even though it is at home. But I'm like visualizing a box score in my head right now, and I can see it.
Yeah.
I can see it. Bryce Cotton, 33 points. He's played 39 and a half minutes. Maybe his shoe came undone and he had to get off the floor to tie his shoelace off. But other than that, he's not leaving the floor. 33 points, 7 assists. Probably gets up 20 shots. Maybe not the most efficient night of all time, but the box score numbers are outrageous. But do they win the game? So the question is, how many points does he have to average over these two or three games? I think it might be 35.
35?
I think so, because I think that they're going to have to score, because we know that this Tassie team scores at a high level. They've done it all season long. I think you're probably going to get 90 points to beat the Jack Jumpers minimum. So if Bryce is getting 35, you're still going to find another 55, 60 points from somewhere.
I think you're really like understating the value of Keanu Pinder, Ty Webster doing something, Christian Doolittle, Jordan Usher coming off the bench for double-digit games. I think Jordan Usher's going to get double digits off the bench. 35 is a lot. If you said 30, I could probably jump on board with that. And even 30 is a lot. He didn't average 30 this season.
I know.
He's going to – and granted, I don't think the Jack Jumpers have the guy to throw at Bryce Cotton, but – they do guard well as a team. They do have Will Magne in there as this imposing figure. 35 a game. Like, I don't know if Bryce can do that. I don't know if Bryce can average 35 a game in a series. Granted, it could just be a two-game series.
That's just a Bryce, really... man.
I know. That's just a really tall order. That's tough. Like, again, if he's averaging around the 30 mark, I think Perth has a chance. If it's 24 or below, I don't know where the production is coming from the Wildcats to win this game. And it's funny, you were talking about those, like, who the best plays in this series are, right? And I agree with you. And again, very funny. I was writing it down as you were bringing that point up.
By the way, Pinder probably unlucky. He could probably consider himself unlucky there.
No, totally. I just think this season, those guys have been better. But then the other part of it, if that's how you're lining it up from a player perspective, from both coaches, which one are you trusting more in this situation? And why is the answer Roth by a pretty significant margin? So on paper, if this is a Jack Jumpers, the Jack Jumpers should be maybe the like clear favorite to win this series. And that's notwithstanding the record that both teams have and whatever, but I think from what we know about this Jack Jumpers team, they're a top three offense, top three defense, and I think they have a top two coach in the NBL with also potentially four of the best five players in this series. Is it weird to think that the Jack Jumpers are maybe a clear favorite here? Or am I just talking myself into this using the most bare level stats? Like this data is like some of the data that we point to. We're not going deep into this stuff. We're talking offense, defense, good player, bad player. I'm so intrigued, and if the Wildcats are going to look like a second seed, or if we're just going to see the Jack Jumpers be the team that I think is a clear favorite.
Yeah, so the Wildcats, after a slow start, have been clearly the second best team in the league from a win-loss perspective. There was a chance there where I thought that they maybe could even catch Melbourne and finish on top. So Perth should be favorites coming into this game. But I think what makes you wary, and this is me, and I would imagine, even if Wildcats fans want to deny this, I would imagine that there is a part of the Wildcats fans deep inside. They think to themselves and think, well, hell, why did we win so many games? And there was a number of things, like you pointed to. I think the role players around Bryce bought in and were fantastic contributors and were reliable and consistent contributors. They played basketball on both ends of the floor. So the team was really good. But it was also Bryce going absolutely nuclear. And so I think that when it comes to the postseason, I clearly believe that Bryce can do it. I just said I think he can average 35 points per game in this series. But I think that what your head tells you is that if you're just relying on one guy and you say, well, what happens if Bryce doesn't play at that absolute elite level? And then you look at the Tassie team and you go, well, what happens if Doyle doesn't play at that level? Well, that's cool because you got McVay. What if McVay doesn't do it? Well, you still got Crawford. You still got Magne. So I think that when you start to add up the options and those real star caliber players, I think the numbers game tells you that Tassie should feel better. I also just think the other point is we haven't watched Perth play for 2 weeks and we just saw Tassie look absolutely awesome a week ago at home, which they will get game two at home, but they do have to go to Perth for game one and game three in this series.
Yeah, and I appreciate the recency bias part of this. Perth at times has looked like a tough place to play. At times it hasn't. That's also, I can also say the same about my State Bank Arena in Tassie. It hasn't been like an absolute fortress. But yeah, I do think a part of this is us just watching the Jack Jumpers beat the Illawarra Hawks by damn near 30 points with Milton Doyle having just like a fine enough game. And granted, it took Will Magne looking like Superman and Jack McVay playing out of his skin again. But that version of Jack McVay is closer to the one that we're... So, like, that's probably closer to the version that we're going to get. I think, and I don't want to put all the pressure on him, but it sort of all rides on Will Magne. And if he's able to be that productive, then I don't know what the answer is if you're the Perth Wildcats. We'll have to see if Marcus Levy plays in this series. He's still, I'm told, is day-to-day with that shoulder. It wasn't a dislocation or anything like that. I think it was similar to McDowell's one a few weeks ago where it sort of just like, it just sort of tweaked. And he felt sort of weird about it, so he couldn't play. But I still think Will Magne should be getting 30-plus minutes in games like this, assuming he can stay on the floor. And if he plays close to the level of what we know his peak is, then, yeah, I don't know what the answer is if you're the Perth Wildcats. The answer is 35 points from Bryce.
Yeah, the Wildcats won 2 out of the 3 matchups this season. They actually played in the first game of the season. And
it's like a 3-point game, right?
If you remember all the way back, it was 6 points. But if you remember, Bryce had 21 in that game. But Jordan Usher had 35. I don't know if you remember that. He went crazy and everyone's like, who is this guy? This import that's come in and we thought he was going to play defense and maybe he's going to lead the league in scoring. So Usher had the 35. They then beat Tassie later on in the season by 1 point. And Bryce Cotton had 28 points in that game. So again, like you've seen that the performances are there. Tassie won the third matchup by 14 points, but Bryce didn't play. So it's irrelevant. To me, that doesn't matter. So the Perth Wildcats would feel good. They've got a couple of wins over this Jack Jumpers team this season. Let's wrap up this podcast by just simply saying who we expect is going to be in the grand final. I think it's clear at this point. I'm not going to jump off Tassie now, even though I think Perth, you know, deserve to be favourites in this series. So I'll go Melbourne and Tassie, but I would expect I would be shocked if the Perth and Tassie series does not have a third game.
I'm the same. I have been telling people for the past 2-3 weeks that I think it's going to be Melbourne Tassie. I think that seems to be the sentiment. If you ask people around the league on different teams and different coaches, administrators, players, they feel like it's going to be Melbourne Tassie. I don't know what series I want to see. Melbourne Tassie will be cool from pure basketball perspective. I like the matchups, like that's exciting. But then seeing Bryce in these moments is also really, really exciting. So I don't have a preference, but just from looking at all the data, from watching games, looking at the form of both of these, all these teams, I think it'll be a Melbourne Tassie final at the end of it.
Yeah, there's something about the Melbourne and Perth matchups that feel big and feel different as well. Mm-hmm. So that would be pretty awesome if we got to see that. We know you're going back a few years ago when Bryce wasn't able to play in a playoffs, it was a completely different experience. So it would be fun to see him back on the grand final. And let's face it, at the start of the season, it was not on anyone's radar that they could potentially get all the way back here. So between the Wildcats and the Hawks, we've got two teams we didn't expect to be here. Melbourne and Tassie, we probably did. But I think it's going
to
be...
Even Tassie, I didn't think Tassie was going to get to this level. The middle of the season, I didn't think they'd get here. We're not all you, Kane.
Well,
Listen.
If I'm going to come out here and say all my bad takes, when you get one decent one, you got to really ram it home to everyone that you've been saying this since round 2. Hey, that's what happens.
I know, but from round one to like 10, I thought Tassie was just kind of average. And then Will Magna came in and transformed them into this team that I think has a championship ceiling. I think that changed everything. So I haven't been on Tassie the entire time, but once the information changed and the data changed, I adjusted my opinion based on the new evidence. So that's where I am. I ended up on the same page as the place that you lucked out when you started the season.
Well, this is what we do, Oggs. We look at the evidence and we're able to change our opinion. So I respect that. And as I said weeks ago now, I welcome you on board the Jackie's train. And hopefully we've got more than three games left. And by the way, we both picked Tassie, which means that the Perth Wildcats fans and social media, they've got it pinned. They're keeping the receipts. So we're going to hear from them if they make it through to the grand final. I'm not anti-Perth, though. I like the Wildcats.
Do you?
Yeah.
You're gonna get an angry Nick Tan tweet be later today.
Nah.
What's gonna happen?
Nah, you'll be worrying about bigger fish than me, my friend.
Yeah. I like the enthusiasm of Perth fans. They're part of the reason why this league is fun. They're engaged as hell.
Thursday night and Friday night, it all gets started. The play-in tournament was awesome again. We do have the final four that we had at the back end of the regular season either way. I believe that happened last year as well. So we're in a good spot. Semi-final basketball, not too far away. The NBA keeps rolling on. We've run out of time today. There was too much to talk about the NBL. But next week, when we come back in the podcast, we'll have to look at the schedule and work out when we're going to do it. But like I said, subscribe and turn the notifications on and join in the conversation. And don't be afraid to get stuck in Olgs if he has some bad takes. There's nothing wrong with that. It has been a pleasure, my friend. It always is great to see you. I look forward to next week. You're getting to go to some live NBL this week. I'm very jealous about that. Enjoy the game.
Yeah, thank goodness. I haven't been to... Melbourne hasn't played in forever, so I haven't been to a game in forever, so I'm really excited.
Enjoy the hoops, everyone. We appreciate you listening to today's show. Keep it locked on ESPN, your home for hoops for everything, and ESPN.com.au for all the latest news. And we'll see you after the first few games of the playoffs.